because he's a good guy. I was a little concerned when he got down. But, you know, they all...
We should talk to Bob, whoever. We ought to have a reference.
It's out, I think so.
Lodging in the city, restaurants, you know, other web pages have that.
Staff? Steve?
All right.
When we're done, let's talk about websites.
Council is back in session.
Meeting websites.
That takes us to our second public hearing this evening. 9B, consideration of an ordinance adding Chapter 2.21 to the Aurora Grande Municipal Code Historic Resources Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council members. This is a continued item from July 12, 2005, and at that meeting, staff gave a presentation and overview of the proposed ordinance and resolution. Also, staff took away from that meeting direction from the City Council regarding the language of the recital section of the ordinance, as well as Residency 16.211, historic resource or district designation under a minor use permit. The recital language, there was some comment over the words control and greatest extent feasible. Staff rewrote that section, trying to state the function of protection through the discretionary review process under CEQA and other protection type processes such as noticing, project alternatives, mitigation measures. And residency and qualifications for members was changed, and it clarified that HRC members do not have to live within the city limits. Members can serve on other city bodies, which are allowed if it's allowed through the municipal code. And although candidates without other city obligations are preferred, it states required knowledge of Aurora Grande history, including people, building, and events, and that technical knowledge and skills are desirable but not necessarily required. With that, staff recommends one, that you introduce the ordinance adding Chapter 2.21 and amending Chapter 16.04 and 1616 to the Municipal Code, and also to adopt a resolution establishing appointment procedures for the Historical Resource Committee. And staff is here to answer any questions.
Are there questions for Jim on the staff report?
I have none.
Okay. This is a public hearing, and at this time I would like to invite anyone in the audience who would like to come forward and address this item, 9B. This would be an opportunity for you to do so. Please state your name and try and limit it to 3 minutes or less. Thank you.
Almost looked like I was going to be the only one anyway. I'm Gary Shirkwitz, 228 Short Street, and as you probably know, I serve on the ARC for the city. I think it was 4 weeks ago when you saw this, initially saw this or discussed this, the issue of technical knowledge on the makeup of the committee was brought up, and most of you thought it wasn't necessary. Serving on the ARC, I would like to suggest that maybe it is necessary, and maybe it's, you know, the more the merrier, I believe, because we from the HRC, and many of the buildings, I realize, will be there for other reasons, for cultural reasons and so on, but those that are coming to us for architectural reasons, I believe we will need some advice on the history of the buildings and the architectural significance of the buildings. From an architectural point of view, not from a historic point of view. That's all I want to say. I just believe that needs to be considered as to in the makeup of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jan Scott, 520 Via Vaquero. I am also curator of the South County Historical Society, and I would respectfully kind of disagree. I have a smattering of knowledge about architecture. I have plenty of books and there are plenty of libraries. If somebody can show me the building in this town that is so special that we don't know about it and it's somehow a hidden thing. I'd like to know about it. What we need are the old timers who can sit and tell us, as they do, no, that building wasn't there at that point, it was put in here. I have nothing against architectural knowledge. I'm afraid that if we frame it as being the primary concern of this committee, that we're in trouble. We're dealing with the history, the historical significance, and yes, there may be some architectural significant buildings. There are, I think. But I think we know about most of them, and if not, I just bet you our architecture guy is going to come tell us. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening. I'm Ross Congable, 255 Rodeo Drive. I'm a member of the board of the South County Historical Society, on the board, a pretty heavy volunteer in a lot of the activity in the four museums that we maintain. We get a lot of calls from outsiders, from locals as well. What did that building look like 50 years ago? I want to change this little bit, but I want to make it like it was, but I don't have any records of it. I've got a call today about something like that. This committee could be a great resource for that history that we're losing and have lost. We have quite a few records in the society of the old city records and tax records, but very few pictures.
Let me find my prepared text here. What I wrote here was, since a large portion of the nominations will be based on historic architectural merit, the committee should have members with technical knowledge. That's not all members, but they should have at least one. If the committee is to make authoritative nominations and provide meaningful recommendations to the ARC, technical knowledge of the various periods and styles of architecture represented in our city would be required. If there were a planner on staff with this academic background, that would be ideal. But I don't think we have a planner on our staff with that background. Short of that, I think that at least one or two members on the HRC should have that knowledge. And that's so that we can write nominations so that the HRC can write nominations authoritatively and that they can advise the ARC, who doesn't always have architects on it, as we know, what is architecturally significant about the building. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Last call. Okay, close the public hearing portion of 9B, and we will bring this back to council. Let's start at the other end. Councilmember Guthrie?
Well, as I said last time, I think it's been a long time coming. I think that we have seen over the last, since I've been involved with this, last 4 or 5 years, that we've been in kind of chase position on these issues. And I think that it'll be good, that we'll be good for everybody, that we'll be out in front of this, that the issues related to historic buildings in the community will be known up front. And I know that we do have the resources available. We have a very active historic society here, and I am looking forward to this getting done and getting started. Say it's been a long time coming, so I can support this as proposed. Just quick comment on the technical part. I will say I was the council person who had to go out and find an architect to be on architectural review, and I'll tell you it's not easy. When you at least here you have, in this case, they don't have to be a resident, but I'll tell you I searched for a long time to find a resident of Arroyo Grande who was an architect who was willing to serve on the board. In fact, Mr. Peachy, who agreed to do it, had to step down from another board in order to be free to do this. So I mean, I will say we're, you know, without the residency requirement is probably a lot.
Rob looking at me saying, well, gosh, you know, this is we can do this, but look at all the other things we're doing. So, and I appreciate all the work that community development does, and I applaud the efforts here, because I think what we have before us is a really nice document, and it really lays out a process that is going to get going. It's not covered, but we've got a nicely laid out process. For us as a city, I think what we're really trying to achieve here is to really go out there and identify what is historically significant and for what reasons. And if we have that information prior to a particular project coming before us, it really helps us, staff, helps the commissions, helps the council to kind of really get a better idea. And I really believe it helps the folks that own these properties and or the potential owners in the future to understand what they really have and what it really means to the city of Arroyo Grande. So that's where I see this as being extremely valuable. As far as the makeup of the committee, I was the one who brought up the concern is, I think myself and someone else did as well, but it was definitely a concern is because it was really focusing on the technical skills and knowledge of historic preservation. And that's not a lot of people have that. It's a very intricate art. There's CEQA law, there's preservation laws, there's things at the state level, at the national level. And really what I think I would like to see this committee do is really identify from a firsthand knowledge of what these buildings, what these structures, what these cultural resources have meant to us from their perspective. And that's really what I think is going to be necessary. We can deal with the architecture. We can deal with the CEQA. We can deal with those types of things as it comes through the process. So the way it's worded, I think, is brilliant. Staff has done a wonderful job again, and we've just changed it. It basically just says, if I can find it real quick, that, it just basically says, I'll read the last part, knowledge and technical skills related to historic preservation, CEQA, and architecture are desirable but are not specifically required. And I think that just keeps it open, and I think that does what we want it to do. So with that, I would have supported it last time, but it wasn't quite ready, so I'm ready to go with it tonight.
And our historical resources in the city and anything we can do to ensure that they remain in the city is very important. So I can support this. I was actually the only one who initially had opposed changing the language. And the more I read through the document, I realized that we are looking at the HRC to advise the ARC, and while I recognize that as much of the heavy lifting that they do, that can do, the reality is, once again, I recognize Councilmember Guthrie's search. I was fortunate enough to get Gary, who was found for me, but it is very difficult to find people with technical skills in the city, and so I think you will probably find yourself doing some of that heavy lifting for us. So I will say thank you right now for the work that you'll be doing. That's all, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have much to add other than to say again, great work from staff. It's nice to get a well-written report that's easy to read. Just point out that in the staff report here, it says that the historic designation program implements general plan objectives and policies and helps the city meet some following specific goals. And I'm not going to bother reading them here, but it lays it out very clearly. And I support what we're doing here tonight. I think it's a very positive step. And thank you again for your work.
Thank you. Okay, I don't want my colleagues or any member of the audience to start pitching things at me, but I was a little bit concerned with the language. I can live with it the way it is. It's not a big deal, but I guess I'm looking at this and I'm thinking kind of the baby in the bathwater thing, and I was listening to what Gary was saying. I was listening to what Jan was saying, and so if you don't like it, just say no, and I'll shut up. But looking at page 10, if we look at, not yet, if we look at page 10 where it says residency and technical knowledge language, the last sentence, you cut everything else out of there. In the last sentence, which Councilmember Dickens read, knowledge and technical skills, so on and so forth, what about if we were to say, so that we don't completely participants, there is perhaps some benefit derived from having someone who might have those skills. We could certainly at least look for that person. If they don't exist, so be it. We're not bound by it. But if they do exist and could, in fact, enhance the makeup of the committee, why not? So, anyhow, that's my two cents. If nobody else wants to do it, then I will go with the flow. But I feel uneasy just completely walking away from the issue and not at least trying to find one person to sit with the majority and at least be a sounding board for some of those issues. So, anyhow, that's my take. I don't know how the rest of you feel.
No.
I think it's saying the same thing, but I can work with either language. I think we'll all probably try to find someone with both historical and technical knowledge, and if one person does, we'll be happy.
Well, my concern is that given the statements, that we won't even look to see if there's just one person. So that was my only concern, but it's not a heavy one. Do you want to add something, Steve?
Yeah, and this doesn't really reflect on that proposed language, but I did want to remind you, and I think it was your proposal that you wanted to emphasize also the ability to do ad hoc committees, and some of the specialization is something we could also promote in those ad hoc committees, particularly for one of the concerns is with technical skills, you're not only looking for somebody with architecture background, but somebody with historical architecture background, which is really specialized in addition to possible committee members, we would also search for some resources that might be able to serve on ad hoc committees.
Okay. All right. I'll be quiet. And entertain a motion.
Make a motion of the City Council to adopt an ordinance of the City Council of Arroyo Grande adding Chapter 2.21 to Title II of Arroyo Grande Municipal Code entitled the Historical Resources Committee and amending Chapters 16.04 and 16.16 of Title 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code establishing an historical designation process.
Second.
We have a motion and a second.
Member Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Farah?
Yes. Thank you. All right, Ross, now you can say no. Okay. Okay, we will wait for council to clear, or the audience to clear, and then we'll get on with 10A. Continued business. Thank you. Consideration to approve a water wheeling agreement with the Oceano Community Services District, OCSD, for the Christie Family Subdivision.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor.
Good evening,
Council members. At the meeting on July 12th, the council considered a request from Robert and Cindy Christie regarding a possible water wheeling arrangement to provide water to their property on Stagecoach Road. At that time, council requested that there be an investigation into providing only fire flow to the Christie property. Based on our investigation, a fire hydrant in this area would be connected to the city's 8-inch water main in Stagecoach Road and extend over to the property. This pipeline provides water to the 250,000-gallon reservoir, city reservoir, and would provide a minimum fire flow of 1,000 gallons per minute. The hydrant assembly would also include various appurtenances and cost, and the cost estimate is about $19,000 for that work. Although the fire hydrant may benefit the city with additional firefighting capacity near the city's northerly boundary, it does not completely address the Christie's primary need for domestic service. There has also been interest by another property owner in the same area who would like domestic service. Mr. Satin Bhatt has expressed interest in receiving water through the city's pipeline. This afternoon, it was brought to our attention that there may be potential to serve the property from a private water system. There are several private water systems off of Stagecoach Road, one that serves the area around Paloma Road. This is the one that might have the capacity to serve the Christie property and the Bhatt properties. It is my understanding that this issue has been briefly discussed. Part of the action this evening is to recommend the changes to the city policy regarding water wheeling and that was presented at the previous council meeting. So that's one of the items as part of the staff report. That concludes my report, Mr. Mayor. I'll be happy to answer any questions. I know the Christies are here to answer any questions. So.
Okay, just for the benefit of the council, the additional information is forthcoming from actually a colleague of mine who lives at the end of Stagecoach, and not only had information with regard to a state small water company that does exist, and I've gotten some additional information from the Christie family and their representative about some potential issues there that that we need to look into. But there was also another local effort up there that I think we need to spend some time further defining, which could in fact present a potential local solution to this issue. So I guess my recommendation, and Don looked into it, staff looked into it, my recommendation would be that we spend a week or two and get this explored thoroughly. We may wind up right back here, but again, if there is a potential for a local solution, I think we owe it to all parties to explore it. Any other questions, comments?
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Don, I had a couple questions in regards to the staff report this evening and the staff report presented back in July of July 12th. And part of my confusion with this is that I'm getting kind of some mixed messages. The issue at hand, from my perspective, when we were looking at this back on the 12th, was primarily meeting the county's requirement for additional water flow for fire services. It appears that what you've investigated now would meet that need, that we could, as a city, via the developer putting up the capital improvement cost, locate a fire hydrant in that particular area, which would serve not only their property but the other properties, and that's the ability to provide the domestic use. It just doesn't have the ability and the size to deal with the fire protection use. And in tonight's staff report, again, it talks about the existing wells can apparently provide an adequate and healthful water supply to serve the additional two units that would be built on the subdivision. So my question to you is, is there adequate domestic water to meet the needs for this particular property if indeed we meet their fire use or their fire protection needs?
As I read it in the staff report, you know, one of the things that came to mind is that that information I got from the LAFCO staff report, and for a state small system, you have to have between 5 and 14 connections. That's the requirement there, and I think that's what they were going for as a state small system. As far as the well itself producing enough for the domestic use, I'm going to ask Terry Horton. He's one who's been engineering the whole system up there. He might have the answer to your question on that particular item.
I think that was where the confusion came in last time, so I appreciate that.
Terry Horton, Westland Engineering. The well has adequate capacity for domestic. Yes.
Okay.
The tank, however, is a problem.
Okay, the tank for the purposes of fire flow? pressure or what?
Well, you have to have a tank to actually have the water in it to be able to do it. I haven't looked to see what size that tank would have to be, because keeping in mind the reason we're kind of in front of you is because where the tank exists today, the people are not really wanting that tank there. But anyway.
Well, and I understand that, Terry, but if they were to take that tank away, then they don't have any water either.
I agree with you. I think that's a...
So they shoot themselves in the foot. So
yeah.
I don't get it.
I don't either, completely.
But, all right.
But maybe I could actually look into it during this continuance and get a little bit more information for you on that.
Okay, any other questions? Yes.
If I understand this correctly, initially the parties came before us because they needed to put the 90,000-gallon tank. Domestic use, it's not for fire use.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Any other clarifications, questions?
Yeah, just a point of clarification. If we continue this tonight, I actually thought that we passed this policy last time. If we continue this tonight, is this policy in place, or do we have to take action tonight to have the policy in place?
Well, it's my recollection that last time we continued it with the same language. That was my understanding. So that's why I'm bringing it forward again.
I thought we actually voted on this language last time to... I do have a little concern that, in fact, we're never going to pass the policy if we continue it, because the whole issue may go away today. I mean, at some point, and then it just never comes back. Can we take action on the policy tonight and then continue the other part of this?
Yes. I believe what happened at the last meeting, look in the minutes, I think the policy approval was in one of the earlier motions but was not in the final motion that was adopted to continue the item.
I think the problem may have been that if you pass the policy, you can't serve the Christie's. And so you're waiting to resolve the Christie issue, and then you were going to impose the policy. That's my recollection. But the motions are all in the minutes, and I think the policy was discussed in the first two motions, but it wasn't in the last two, and it wasn't in the continuance motion that subsequently passed.
Well, perhaps what we can do, regardless of whether or not we're able to find a local solution, is... request staff to come back with the policy one way or the other.
That'll satisfy my concern.
Okay. Any other discussion? This is not a public hearing, but certainly if you want to have any other statements, I think we have a few avenues to pursue and see if we can find some local solution. So, any other comments? If you'd come to the microphone, please.
Bob Christie, 624 Stagecoach Road. I think I'm a little confused now, concerned that if the policy is passed prior to our dealing with our issue, then we're automatically not considered.
No, that's not what we're doing.
Oh, okay.
No, we're going to get...
I'm Cindy Christie. Nice to meet you all. Thank you for the continuance. Would I request that we continue until not this next meeting, but the following meeting, because that gives us adequate time. And actually, the next meeting is the first day of school for Bobby's last semester, so he probably shouldn't miss it. And he teaches out of town, so if we could wait till... And the next one will be 3 days after my birthday, so maybe we'll have something good, you know? How's that?
Good.
Good way to start my 50th year. What do you say?
Actually, staff wanted to hold off for 30 days, but the last conversation that we had, you guys said a month.
I know, but then we did the math.
Okay. All right. So that would be okay. All right. Any other discussion? No other public input on this item. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I move we put off consideration of item 10A to the date specific, September 13th? September 13th.
Here we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, do we need another motion for staff to bring language back otherwise?
I think the language is going to come back.
Yeah.
Either way.
Either way.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right, that takes us to 10B, consideration of an update of the city's water use and supply.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On November 23rd, the council reviewed the water alternative study and directed staff to coordinate an updated water and sewer rate study. Also to solicit proposals for a groundwater study in cooperation with the other participants of the basin agreement. Provide additional information regarding the Nacimiento water supply option and prepare an initial study of the cost and feasibility of constructing a desalinization plant. In addition, at the May 10th meeting, City Council Member Costello requested staff to provide additional information next year. You know, it's been difficult to obtain reliable data regarding the impacts of this tiered rate structure on the water usage. Jurisdictions that were contacted have estimated that they experience 1-2% reduction after they've been enacted. Therefore, staff has conservatively projected a 1% reduction in response to the city's overall water conservation efforts and planning purposes. Of course, the tiered rate structure is only one component of a comprehensive conservation program and is being combined with a public education effort as well. A series of public education brochures have been prepared and were distributed in June and July. I'm sure you received those in your water billing statements there. Articles have also been written and printed in both the Times Press Recorder and the Stagecoach Express. The retrofit program, we're going to address that separately because I think the results can be estimated relatively accurately based upon the actual numbers of units replaced. You know, there have been about 806 residences that have been retrofitted to date, leaving about 2,800 remaining. As of April 30th of this year, there's been a savings of approximately 20 acre feet as a result of the retrofit program. The total projected savings from this program is estimated to be about 100 acre feet. This is based on a projected 12,000 gallon savings per year for each retrofit and the projected 2,800 additional retrofits that need to be done. As was mentioned earlier, Well 10, the project was recently bid. However, the bids received by the city were greater than expected. The project has been redesigned, and it is anticipated that new bids will be received on August 30th of this year, and it is anticipated that an award of the contract will be considered by the council in September. This well is scheduled to begin producing potable water in September of next year. It is projected to ultimately generate 100 to 200 acre feet of water per year. Therefore, in calculating, doing the calculations for the spreadsheet that I'll talk about in a minute, we used a conservative estimate of 100 acre feet for supply on that projection. Staff has proposed an agreement with the Oceano Community Service District, and this is for a temporary water purchase, and we talked about that this evening as well. Which will ultimately be aligned to the dam at the base of the dam. A property owner, however, adjacent to the oil field has appealed the EIR. That appeal was heard by the Board of Supervisors today and was denied, allowing the project to move forward. So once that is online, approximately 700 acre feet are anticipated to be delivered to the base of the dam. And the project is scheduled to be completed a year from now. this source is projected to be a 10-year period Therefore, this source needs to be accompanied with a strategy for a future permanent water source that would replace it when necessary. Of course, we have talked about these before. We have three options, including the ability to increase the city's groundwater allocation through the groundwater study that we'll get underway here shortly, the Nacimiento Water Project, or the construction of a desalinization plant. The Nacimiento Water Project and construction of the desal plant are both feasible options that could be developed within the time period required, within that 10-year period. Additional groundwater allocation is an option that could become available immediately once the study is completed, which is towards the end of this year, beginning of next year. Just to give you a little bit more background on what's happening on the groundwater study, we had a meeting on July 27th to go over the scope of work for the consultant. This groundwater analysis is being prepared and financed by all the agencies participating in the Basin Management Agreement. So based on the initial feedback that we've had and initial discussions, we're somewhat optimistic that the findings of the study will result in additional groundwater capacity. Under the existing groundwater management agreement, and we talked about this, I think, once before, the city will receive the first 359 acre feet of any increase of the safe yield allocated to the urban parties, and that's the amount we gave up pumping in the original 1982 agreement. That would represent an increase in supply of approximately 10%. The Nacimiento Desal Feasibility Study, we had a meeting last month, or in June actually, to discuss the scope of work and the time schedule. The scope of work includes all of the environmental issues, the estimated costs. As far as the water supply and demand, due to concerns with the city's water supply capability to accommodate future projects, staff has prepared an analysis of the projected water demands and the future water supply, and that's Exhibit 1 in your staff report, where we go through a timeline of when these projects or developments will come online versus when we have additional supplies coming online. The exhibit identifies the city's water resources as well as the projected uses from these developments. The best estimates were used to program when both future development projects and water supply measures will be completed. So we estimated using the best available information we have. All known potential projects are included, whether they're in the planning stages, the plan check, or in construction stages. So we've tried to include all the projects that we know about. The estimated date in which development projects are constructed, as well as the future water supplies, were plotted on a graph. That's Exhibit 2, and I think I have Exhibit 2 shown up there. And this is used to compare graphically the future water usage versus supply. So as you can see from Exhibit 2, through a combination of water savings from retrofits and water conservation efforts, water purchased from OCSD on a temporary basis, Well 10 construction, and reclaimed water from the Price Canyon oil field, the city can accommodate existing plan growth consistent with the general plan. Staff has incorporated conservative estimates throughout these projections, so we believe the forecast will be reliable. Projections for water use for the development projects were determined by using the general plan estimate of 2.4 people per household, 2 people per office commercial suite, and 1 person for a senior development unit. These factors were applied to the projects within the city that are either under construction, as I mentioned, in plan check, or in the process of attaining entitlements. So based on these projections, staff believes that it is safe for the city to proceed with its normal development review process in a responsible way without threat of water shortages, except in periods of serious drought, during which periods, of course, the city's mandatory water conservation measures would become appropriate. As for the water conservation measures, the council shall from time to time adopt they will be effective in responding to the emergency situation at hand. The current issue, however, has not been a short-term emergency, but rather a long-term supply issue. Therefore, staff proposed beginning with the voluntary measures prior to activating the mandatory measures and then modifying the municipal code to better reflect the intent of these conservation measures and when they would be used. So with that, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to conclude my report and be able to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. Am I reading this projected water use and water supply matrix correctly? If we look down at the very bottom, December 31st of 07, cumulative water usage versus water supply. We're looking at roughly 190, 192 acre feet difference between projected cumulative water usage and cumulative water supply. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's actually 207, I believe. Yes.
Well, I'm looking at 3846.2 and 4038. Anyway, my question, Don, I guess the reason why I pointed, I come up with 192. Maybe my math is wrong, but there's not a lot of margin for error there.
Mm-hmm.
What happens in this time progression if one of the mitigation measures does not come online or doesn't come online at the level that we anticipated or projected? What happens to subsequent projects? What do we do?
Well, at that time, I think we'd have to take another look at our projections here and see where we're at that time. Part of this whole thing is to look at this periodically to see where we are at. For instance, some of the development projects.
Chart, to be conservative, we only incorporated those that we were fairly confident were underway and would be approved, even though those we understand have some risks. But things like the groundwater management study, the habitat plan, those are not incorporated in these projections. Specifically, what we're recommending is at the time the groundwater study is approved, that would be the time we would come back and review this, revise the numbers, and then determine, based on the results of that study, what additional strategies we'd have to go forward after that. That would, at that point, that's the point we're going to get the best picture of where we're at now and in the future when we get that groundwater study back.
Okay. I just wanted to mention, kind of get a sense of if you've had any experience with this at all. I know I mentioned it to Steve. I don't think I had a chance to mention it to you, Don. But Mayor Pro Tem and I, in fact, Councilmember Guthrie was there as well, but we were all at a recent League of Cities forum, Mayor Council forum. And they had an interesting workshop put on by a pretty well-traveled panel. One was a water attorney. The other, I think, was either a planning director or public works director from the city of Monterey. And, of course, they're in dire straits when we talk about water. But the name of the workshop was, "If You Build It, Will the Water Come?" And they had an interesting concept that I wanted to suggest to council to consider for the future as part of this item. But their approach was to ensure that there was a positive correlation between the water master plan and the general plan. And in order to make that happen so that particularly water issues get reconciled with general plan elements like land use, that you do in fact create a water element to the general plan. Mm-hmm. And that becomes then the catch-all for all mitigation measures that you have ongoing, some of the long-term projections, It gets updated when the general plan update gets brought up to date. Then you can make sure that it coincides then with the rest of the general plan elements.
Well, you're right. They are. That's a very interesting comparison because you're right. They do tend to take different timelines. You know, the general plan's usually on a 10-year timeline, and the water master plan's on usually 3, 4, or 5-year timeline. So making those coincide would be, definitely a better use of the information. But it's been my experience that the water master plans do tend to go their own direction and sometimes don't necessarily coincide with some of the general plans. So that's basically been my experience over the years.
Okay. Who else has questions? Yeah. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Going back to, Don, going back to this table, back to the same thing Tony was talking about, we get to the December 31st, 07, and it goes from the next to the last entry to the last entry in the cumulative usage, and it goes from 3876.6, and then it goes down 30, even though we're adding 3.9. How did that happen?
That's a good question. I think
table wasn't added correctly.
It may not have been, but
or was there a supply that kicks in there that's not represented?
No, the supplies are on the same column, so I don't see any additional supplies there.
So the actual total should be 3880.5.
Apparently, yes.
0.1.
0.1.
Okay. And can you explain one thing to me? On the Nasimeno project we're looking at, we're considering that to kind of dovetail on the end of the oil field water. We'd use the same pipeline that's going to bring the water from the oil field over to Lopez, put some sort of extension in to tie into that.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it was only the Price Field, the Price Canyon water, oil field water would be half the... Half the pipeline, the other half would be from Price Canyon up to the city of St. Louis and somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay. And can you explain to me just really briefly, how does a really wet year, rain year, affect all of this? Does it increase our Lopez supply, or does it just make that safer?
Well, it can. I mean, if there's a spill, then there's...
What do we show for a drought year? Is there an increased use short of our... putting in some sort of measures to curtail use?
Well, what we did was...
historical data on that?
What we did was on page 2, we put back the excess of rainfall so that we actually came back to kind of a normal year.
Do we have any historical data that shows a particularly bad drought year and what the use was?
We do have historical records over the years that we can tell which years were drought, that sort of thing, yeah.
Well, we should point out, I wouldn't actually say it returned it to a normal year. The prior year, which this is based on, was a pretty dry year.
Right.
And there is a chart in the report that shows, page 5, production per capita in 2004, which is the base year used in this report, is 193, which is the second highest in the past 15 years or so on that chart. So once again, we try everything within this chart, we tried to use some really conservative assumptions so that we'd have some security that this is going to be accurate.
I'm glad you brought that chart up because I did some calculating today and figured out what the per person use per gallon is based on the estimated population we have in there. And the total meter consumption, and it's kind of interesting. It went from a low in 1995 of 1998 of 147.85 gallons per person per day to a high of 187.25 gallons per person per day, which was 2004. What of these years were drought years? Can you tell me? Am I looking too deeply here for meaning?
Well, I certainly think that the possibility of the ones that are very low would be the more drought-type years. So we're looking at 1995...
Actually, 1995, I think, was the El Nino. I think you're saying it backwards.
1992 is also very low.
Yeah.
So those would tend to be the years in which we had some.
And we look at a very wet year, 2004, and we've got the maximum use gallon per person.
No, 2004 was a dry year.
Yeah,
2005 is
a wet year. 5 is the wet year. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's all the question. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
You said we've done, through the retrofit program, we've replaced a certain number of toilets and showers, and I thought you said 860. I'm just trying to get a sense of whether that's happened in the last 2 years or in the last 10 years.
Oh, no, this is the retrofit. About halfway down the page on the right-hand side, we've done 106 residential units, and that's just since the program has been initiated, which was sometime last year.
Oh, okay, so 106 in the last year.
Yeah.
Okay, and do you know what we've done over, because this isn't the first retrofit program we've had.
I believe it is.
All right, I stand corrected. It's more of a...
I'm sorry. It's 806.
We've done 806 in the last year.
Yes. Like year and a half. Yeah.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens?
Yeah, Don, I got a couple questions. I'm going to go to page the projected water use chart that you have, and you have your assumptions. And I just wanted you to clarify some of those assumptions. How do you calculate the individuals per office / commercial suite as two persons per suite? How does that, when you look at actual land use and we look at a proposed project, how does that correlate?
Well, we took the the land use project, whether that was a commercial, if it was in this case a commercial, and we took the commercial suite. We took two people per whatever that commercial property development was. So, for instance, if it was a 10 office complex, then we would multiply that time 2 and come up with the number of occupants for that particular commercial development or office development.
I think his question is, where did you get the two people?
The two people is from the general plan. And so is the 2.4 or 2.5 we have people per household.
Okay. So there's – okay. I just don't – when you're looking at a project, when you say a suite could house, you know, I mean, in that game, we're talking about assumptions, and we're basing that on averages.
Right.
But that's how it's calculated. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask another question. And by the way, it appears, just for the assumption of 188, if you took the average for the last 17 years, you actually get 175. So the 188 is actually a little high, but that's based on a worst-case scenario.
Right,
so,
and that was based on the last five or six years.
Yeah, we think we have a much bigger buffer in here, but really the goal was to be able to show under a worst-case scenario that we'd be okay.
I like when I go back to the water master plan, too, because we talk about this is worst-case scenario. There are when we have rainy season and we do have surplus Lopez project water, back in 1990, we were able to get 700 acre feet. Back in 1995, we were able to, in addition, 910 acre feet. Now, I think that was before we had our habitat, and so I think that's going to be severely restricted. But nonetheless, that's you know, something to at least look at. And then we do have this the Soto Sports Complex, where we're able to use about 100 acre feet per year when we have a wet year. We had a wet year last year, but I don't believe we're going to get 100 out of that, and that's based on two issues. One, I believe, is the pump has gone bad, or we need the, right? Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Plus, it's probably I'm assuming maybe was it full anyways this year?
It wasn't totally full because we were expecting another storm, so we drew it down a little bit lower than we would normally. So it was not full at the beginning of the at the end of the rainy season.
Right. Don, one of the questions when I saw this chart, and I'm referring to the chart on page 5 again, the water supply hit the historical chart that I brought up, I believe, in years past, and I still want to continue to bring it up. You have a column here, the UAW in acre feet. And the UAW represents the unaccountable, the unaccounted for water use. And that's water use that's going through, that's metered, but it just doesn't go anywhere, right? It's either through leaky pipes, it's through construction water that's not, something's going on there. Is that correct?
Right.
Is there anything in your mind from a public work standpoint that we could reduce that, just that we got 100 acre feet back in 2004 that's just not accounted for? Isn't that something that we should be looking at and maybe trying to rectify that as an issue?
Well, I tell you, it's been my experience in dealing with water systems that if you're below 5%, you're doing really well.
So that's pretty typical to see that then.
Pretty typical, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of water.
Yeah.
Well, was that it?
Yes.
If you look at that same chart, Don, 2003, we had 41. Mm-hmm. 2004, we had 104. Mm-hmm. What causes that kind of fluctuation?
And you'll notice that, in years 94, there was 215, and then in 95, there's only 43.
Okay, so what causes that?
Just the accounting of the water. And I think there's maybe sometimes where there's maybe a main break. In 2003, I believe we have the earthquake that we had a rupture in one of our mains that leaked for several hours, and that was an 8-inch main. So there's a lot of water that went out of the system when it wasn't accounted for. So when you have those kinds of events, which I believe were probably the cause of some of these larger numbers.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, this is not a public hearing, but we typically allow folks to comment on continued business and new business items. So if there's any member of the audience who would like to come forward and comment on 10B, be an opportunity for you to do so. No? Okay. Then we'll bring it back for final comments, observations, and action. And Councilmember Dickens, why don't you start this one?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to just, the way I look at things is not always the same as how staff looks at things in regards to this, but I really appreciate, Don, your work in putting this together. Because I really do believe, after I looked at it, I felt pretty comfortable. These are some conservative numbers. And again, we do need to plan for the worst-case scenario. I think that's prudent. I do think that although I would probably would like to see a larger percentage of some leeway here when we get down to the end. In other words, we're still pretty close. We're talking out to 2007, we're pretty close here. And that doesn't give me a very good comfort level. Kind of like our bank account, I sure like to have those results that deal with when we develop a single-family residence. We put some assumptions to that. Every single family residence has a minimum, an average of 2.5 residents per single family residence. And then we put a gallon amount. So what does that project need to bring to the table? And what we use as our standard is the 350 gallons per day per capita. It's 350 gallons per day per single family unit. I'm sorry, because there's and I would argue that point. I think it really need. If we're really going to talk about worst case scenario, and we're going to talk about the assumption of 188 gallons per capita, which is what you're using in this chart, that's what we need to put down for single family residents, which would actually up it to 470 gallons per day per a 2.5 family. And the reason why is because that family is not only using that water in that house, which is what the project is bringing forth, but that family is now going to school. It's going to go to retail. It's going to go to the parks. It's using water in other areas. And that, to me, when we look at a water supply issue, that needs to be the numbers that we use per, and I'm just using that as an example, single-family residents, should be really the 470 gallons per day if we're going to use that 188 per capita figure as opposed to what the project is required to bring forth. So that's just my thought on that. I also wanted to make a comment on in regards to what you've put together here. I'm not as optimistic on some of these issues, and specifically the Price Canyon oil field water. I think that is just fraught with a lot of different environmental issues and things that are going to put some stumbling blocks along the road in that particular project. I'm not going to bet the family farm on that happening in the near future. It's probably going to be further out than we expect. There's going to be a lot of things that are going to happen between now and that actually happening. I hear a tone with the groundwater study that, you know, when we get the groundwater study, we're going to actually find that we have more water. Well, we don't know that. I mean, in reality, there could be less, and I keep throwing that out. There could be less water, so we don't know. That could actually be a negative for us. We really need to focus on the Anasazi mineral for long term, and we need to focus on the possibility of desalination. I'm concerned about these temporary agreements. It's good. Don't get me wrong with Oceano. I think that's a really good thing. But knowing politics the way I do, that could just be snafu'd away at any time. And we can't put all our eggs in that basket. So those are just some of my comments. The last comment I want to make deals with the mandatory water conservation measures. And I guess I have a little bit different take. You know, we have this four-tiered system that we have in place, and the staff is looking at this as well. The reason why we didn't, even though we actually reached a 97% supply last year, we didn't go into any one of these mandatory and I agree with that. I didn't want to do that either, any kind of mandatory conservation measures. But we really need to look at the fact that the difference between short-term emergency and long-term supply issues, I really think we have a long-term supply emergency. And I think that if things don't get better in the near future, that we may need to really look at this. And I think the public needs to understand that that we're right there. So I certainly am appreciative of what you put together. I think it's logical, but again, I think it's a little optimistic, and I just hope that we're able to move forward and actually secure a reliable additional water supply into the long-term future. And that's really what I think we need to be focusing on, because that's going to take us 15 to 20 years, in my opinion. So, thank you.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Well, first of all, I'll say I found this to be a particularly useful report. I mean, particularly for looking at short-term issues, looking down the road 2 and 3 years like we are here, the potential additional supplies we have and the demands that we're expecting, I found this to be one of the best ways of looking at it, rather than, frankly, just throwing out a whole bunch of numbers and what the population might be, actually looking at the pipeline, looking at both the supply pipeline and also the demand pipeline. I guess I would echo Mayor Ferraro's thought that we really need a more formal policy. I mean, the fact that we're sort of debating whether we're using 5-year develop, you know, one strategy or another. Either we're going to take a strategy that says when we start to exceed our water capabilities, that we go into some sort of mandatory water allocation programs, or we take the other strategy, which is, I think, is the direction that we're talking about going, and that is that we're going to build in a huge buffer and have extra water available so that we don't have to do this. I mean, personally, I think that's a problem. I'll just say, having gone through this, that you need to start early. we got bailed out this year because we got a wet year. But what if last year, you know, actually the last 3 years were the beginning of a 7 or 8 year drought, which is actually quite common. We really needed to start early in our mitigation programs in order to prepare us, because we don't have significant amount of water sitting out here, you know, 2 and 3 years out. We might be 10 years out. So I think we need to come up with some sort of a more formal policy than saying, well, you know, we sort of thought it was really kind of a dry year, so we didn't implement these programs. If it really is the beginning of a drought cycle, we need to move more quickly than that, and we need to have people thinking that way. So I don't know whether general plan element is the way to go. I didn't attend that seminar. I kind of wish I had. I'm trying to remember which one I went to now that I missed that for. But I do think some sort of more formal policy, so that, like I say, we're always talking the same language. I'm pretty comfortable that this is that we're in the short term here, that we're okay. I do think that they're relatively conservative estimates on use. But if next year is now the beginning of a 5 year drought, then we're in trouble, and we need to be prepared to move fairly quickly, because the margins are not very big here. I don't think the move is necessarily that we're going to have a moratorium. I think the move is that we're going to ask people to change their behavior and use less water. And I guess those are my basic comments on this. I do think, by the way, one thing that would be useful here would have been to actually include the rain year averages for this year, so we're not. It's kind of an interesting circle to say, well, we're assuming this was a drier or wet year because there was more or less water use. It's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. We really should include so that we know whether it was a wet or a dry year, in order to take a look at the water uses. And I think I mentioned this to you. I think some of the population assumption would be we're using 2 people per suite for a commercial project. I mean, that's almost equivalent to a home. And yet I know that our commercial property uses a tiny amount of the total water. So I'm wondering, I assume there's some sort of, you know, data behind that, but it just seems inconceivable to me that an office suite is equivalent in water use to a home.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of factors there. I mean, there's the irrigation that goes into that. There's all kinds of different office and commercial uses where you have higher intensity of people than others. So it's kind of an average.
Because you have restaurants. I mean, I was almost thinking that we'd be better off just to use a square footage and divide the square footage and just assume that there'll be an averaging of, you know, as many restaurants as offices coming in the future than trying to actually assign a population number to it and then multiply from that. It just seemed odd to me. But those are my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I'd like to comment that I found the report very useful and informative. I specifically like the spreadsheet that showed us where our projects are going to be taking us. I think right now it's a little premature to be trying to make a guesstimate on some of the projects. It looks like we've got a pretty short timeline right now with the end of the year where we're gonna have a lot more information, and so I'm a little more inclined to kind of hold kind of where I think what I think we should be doing next until we really do have an idea of what the groundwater study is going to show us and what the costs are going to be for the nacimiento and the desalination. I for one, my preference has been, and unless the costs show us otherwise, I think long term we should definitely be looking at the desalination, because it is a completely different type of water source. It does not require Mother Nature to cooperate. So I think I've expressed that thought before. So that's definitely where my mind is right now. I am concerned that we are constantly looking at new sources of water that are totally dependent upon Mother Nature. So other than that, I really don't have as much to cover. I found the discussion tonight by the other members very interesting, but I definitely am just kind of, I really would rather wait and see what these studies do. I'm a little more positive. I think staff has been very conservative on their numbers, and so therefore I think that actually
groundwater allocation from local additional Lopez water after habitat conservation plan has been adopted. We end up with potentially about 350 acre feet per year of additional supply. And even though we're being conservative in the table we put together and the numbers we're looking at, that could go wrong. It's possible we might not see that 350 acre feet a year. If that happens, that leaves our supply at 3,688 acre feet a year. And then if we take our demand as projected, we're going to get to 3,880 acre feet by December of 07. Which would put us short a couple hundred acre feet. So I hope that our conservative numbers bear fruit. I hope that we're not in the beginning of a seven-year drought. We don't see numbers going the wrong direction. But I can't be sure that that's the case, so we'll have to wait and see. I think we do have to look at a dependable long-term supply, and that's something we must focus on. I agree with Councilman Dickens on that, and I think that's critical. We do have to pursue that. I think we really must stay on top of these short-term solutions also and make sure they remain viable, and if they don't, be able to react to them quickly. I think perhaps what the mayor is suggesting is appropriate, and that we might want to add a water element to our general plan. We need some sort of balancing and monitoring on a more regular basis in terms of supply and demand. I don't want to see us coming back here in a year going, oh, we're going to be 40 or 50 acre feet short this year. So I commend you on the work that we've done so far. I hope the numbers are as conservative as they seem to be and that we end up with a larger surplus than what we look at, but I think time will have to tell. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Well, let me start off with echoing some of the comments that we've heard already. Don, I think the table that you presented us with is, I think this is the first time that I've seen it laid out this way, and it is very helpful in terms of looking at water use versus water supply, but coupled with a drought. We're talking about a massive fluctuation that could, in fact, completely do away with 198.2 acre feet cushion. Those kinds of things happen. So what I would like to see is a couple of things. I would like to see staff bring back a proposal for a water element that could, in fact, be updated along with the rest of the general plan. If there are amendments to a land use element in the general plan, then there also has to be a revisiting of the water element so that we make sure, once again, as we're required by law to do, to make sure those elements mesh with one another. I think that is it should be a clearinghouse for our water policies, both short, mid, and long term. To include criteria for imposing them. On an operational scale, which means more frequent monitoring and more frequent action taken, what I would like to see done is it's a good thing to have projected water use and water supply. I would like to see another matrix set up that has these same entries. But now we're dealing with actual water use and we're dealing with actual water supply as it materializes or not. That way, we sort of fill in these columns, most of them at least, as we go. We look at cumulative water usage versus cumulative water supply as some of these things come online, these mitigation measures. If the mitigation measure does not produce what it's projected to, or for one reason or another, as Councilmember Dickens indicated, the whole project goes south and it's not going to become a reality, then we need to factor that in as well. So if we are kind of integrating in these mitigation measures that boost our supply. And then below them, we're projecting to go ahead and build more, which is going to increase our consumption. Then, you know, this needs to be, I think, and this is going to have to be a policy that we come to. I'm not comfortable with changing behavior patterns, and I know Councilmember got mitigation or our mitigation strategies does not happen. We're going to have to stop, and we're going to have to take a hard look at what is in the pipeline. And I know people don't want to hear it, but I'm going to say it anyway. The city of Monterey didn't do a good job of that. And as a result, right now, they find themselves out of water. So much so that they have now restricted completely all residential development and all restaurant development. And so what I'm going to propose is that if we find ourselves in that position, it is irresponsible for us to continue to move forward. So what we need to do, I think, like the city of Monterey has done, if we find that our best planning effort has failed and we cannot bring supply online, then we need to develop something like a water waiting list, which is a strategy that they use. And unfortunately, they waited a little bit too long to impose it. But I think what we need to be is proactive. If the supply isn't there, we cannot keep building consumption into the system and hope for any kind of a favorable outcome. It just isn't going to happen. So what that means is that even though if we decide we want to have a water element to the general plan, that only gets updated 5 to 7 years unless there's an amendment to something like land use. But I would like to see an actual water use, water supply table similar to this that is monitored twice a year. We look at actual consumption for everything you got listed here. And if there's an imbalance, we can't afford to let that go. We need to go back and we need to look at cumulative usage, cumulative supply as it actually happens. If we don't do that, then we're going to find ourselves in a position like the city of Monterey. I don't want to see us go there. So it's going to take some additional vigilance. I know you're loaded with staff, and it's not going to be an issue. But, again, we would be irresponsible if we did not be very vigilant in this area. So those are my recommendations. You know, what that does is take the guessing out of it. If for some reason or another something falls through. All right, the recommendation here, do you want a motion here?
I think we have general direction, unless anybody disagrees.
Well, we've reviewed the information. I think we've given staff direction and reconsider projection strategies when the groundwater water study is completed.
Maybe I can review what I think I heard and make sure you're in agreement with it. One, we'll start developing at least a proposal for a water element process for you to review. We'll start maintaining this chart on an ongoing basis, which I think is a great idea. And by maintaining, I mean we'll be adding actual data as these projects and different things come online. And then our intent, as I mentioned before, if anything significantly changes here, we would come back sooner. Otherwise, we're targeting the completion of the groundwater study as the time to come back and have another full evaluation at that time, see what the impact of that is. And at that point, it could be either we have extra water and things are great, or maybe there's some problems and we have to go to some of these other alternatives. And if you looked in this report there, we did lay out some alternatives that are similar to what Monterey is doing. And so we're starting to draft those, we just don't feel we want to recommend. You know, we don't feel we're there yet in terms of needing to do them, but we're starting to draft those as options if necessary at that point.
Okay, anybody want to add to the list or enhance what Steve just said? Everybody comfortable with it?
Yeah, just one thing on projected use that we talked about in the past was actually doing some sort of a study or just a, even if it was just a sampling, to determine water use, for instance, on single-family house versus if we could get a more accurate number on office use, but also on multifamily versus single-family home use. I know that we had some numbers, but I'm not sure that they were based on anything.
I want to make sure we got it clear.
if you're talking about the multifamily use being, because there's several different categories in that particular.
More hard data on what it really is.
I mean, what we can do is when a project is initiated or when it first starts, we can use a project that's similar to that, and after a year, we can actually take the real information and plug that in. But in prior to that, we can use something that's very similar.
I would think you could go out and pick two or three different samples of mm-hmm. of these housing types and actually just read by looking at the history on 20 meters, you could come up with it. I mean, study of every single home in the city. But
actually, that's what we did with the Hampton Inn on the last project. We actually, through this process, using these formulas, we came up with an estimate for Hampton Inn. As part of the review of the project, community development staff came up with a more accurate estimate based on actual usage from other hotels. And what we found, once again, is the data in here was high. So, once again, it tended to reinforce, again, that we were being conservative on these estimates. But we can do that with other types of land uses.
I think the only other item that was probably, it's a minor item, but I think it's, for my sake, it's curiosity, is if we could add a column to the historic metered consumption versus estimated population, if we could add a column that just has the annual rainfall. Okay. It'd just be interesting to see.
Anything else?
A quick question, if I might. Going back to the table you put together, Don, with projected use and supply, does that projected water usage include the unaccounted water? Do you have some sort of a number thrown in for that, or? So I know it varies greatly. It's been 40 acre feet to 250 acre feet.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a number that we throw in there for that.
It would be in the base year, the base number we started with.
Yeah.
Okay.
We probably did not show an increase by project as it goes up, okay. But there would be some number within that.
So it
base
starts
year.
With the base year. And, okay, great. Thank
and
you.
As I recall, that base year was high, I think. Yeah, 2004 was fairly high in that number, too. So,
any other direction for staff? I'm going to be busy during that whole conference, so I can either do it or somebody else can do it and be an alternate. But it would require staying for the entire session, right through the general session, which is the very end. No ducking out early.
I'm willing to do it, but I do think that Mayor Pro Tem has a lot more experience, and so does Mr. Dickens. I mean, but I don't see them jumping at the chance either. So maybe I'm being a fool here.
I think it'd be a great experience for some of our new council members to maybe participate in that process.
It sounds like a hazing.
Okay, well, any volunteers?
All right, I'll volunteer.
Okay, do we have another volunteer?
I'll be the alternate.
All right, very good.
Love it.
Did you want to be the alternate?
All in favor?
I'm planning on being there.
Okay.
It's in a tree process.
How about a motion then?
Mr. Mayor, I move that Councilman Guthrie be the voting delegate and Councilman Arnold be the alternate delegate
second.
To the League of Cities meeting.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call.
Oh, yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. How about a little more enthusiasm? Come on, you guys.
That's right. We got to earn our money here. That's
all right. That takes us to 12 city council member items. Any this evening? None. City manager items?
None tonight, sir.
Okay. 14 is council communication.
At this point, does anyone know if the Cypress, I know we had a letter from Rob on it, if the Cypress extension for was appealed or not? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it passed the Planning Commission. Maybe I misunderstood.
Housing requirement.
Thank you.
Any other council communication? Staff communication?
None tonight.
Okay. That'll take us to 16, our final community comments and suggestion period. Anyone who would like to make a final comment this evening? Okay. Then that takes us to adjournment.
So moved.
Okay. Thank you, everyone. We are adjourned.